Welcome to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion. Criterion is a global leader in assessment solutions, providing software for test development and delivery, as well as test development services for low to high stakes certification programs.
All right, Ram, welcome to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me, Buzz. Exciting to talk to you about what's going on in AI.
Yeah, definitely. So you're the VP of AI and Automation at RingCentral. Tell us a little bit about your company and what problem do you guys solve out there in the world?
Sure. So I work as VP of Products for AI at RingCentral. RingCentral is based in Belmont Bay Area, and we are a leader in unified communication for businesses large and small, as well as for cloud communications for contact centers. Okay. So, you know, when you call a 1-800 number, the system that kind of routes the call to the right agent, et cetera, all of that is powered by RingCentral. And the company has been around for nearly 25 plus years. It's a public company. We're based in Bay Area, but we have offices around the world. Our customers are also based mostly in US and North America, but we also have a large footprint in Europe and Asia.
Okay, interesting. You know, I remember this was probably a few years ago, there was a call center that I was working with on the marketing side, but they managed the automation as far as leads coming in, and once the lead came in, they used to spread it through the RingCentral tool. Is that sort of how it all works?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are focused on communications that happens on multimodals, right? It could be on phone calls, which is audio. It could be chat, SMS, or it could be through emails and other communications. So it doesn't matter where the communication happens. We are the platform through which everything goes through. And when you know, because we kind of become a hub for communications for customers, we are in a unique opportunity to kind of augment and improve that communication paradigm. You know, improvements in terms of, you know, providing notes, or providing transcripts, and also providing, like, thinking about what the conversation was and kind of triggering workflows based on, let's say, for example, you're unhappy about your service and you say that I want to cancel, you know, my service for whatever, right? And because we understand that you're pretty upset and you're a loyal customer, we can understand what the conversation is about and trigger some actions and say, okay, we can give you a coupon or a discount to continue the service. So all these intelligence that needs to happen can be triggered and identified through the calls and conversations happens on RingCentral.
Interesting. So when you think about the last 2 years, you all had a program, you've been doing this for 25 years. Now, in the last 2 years with the emergence of ChatGPT, OpenAI, and all of this world of AI that perhaps was there in the background, but many of us didn't pay attention to, and it sort of emerged. How did it shift the way your company functions?
Oh, very dramatically, right? And the effects of which I think it's not quite settled yet for the industry. I mean, I kind of look at it in two buckets. One is we are using, you know, GitHub Copilot and other kind of tools by our engineers are using it to, you know, increase their productivity in terms of how they develop code and how it's get posted and reviewed, et cetera. So there is improvements to everyday working that our developers and engineers are using. But more for our customers, I think it is a big, I think it's a point of inflection, I would say. Previously, what used to be, like, for example, we have spoken to chatbots, we have used, interacted with voice bots with large enterprises. With the advent of ChatGPT LLMs and open source as well as private models, what used to be a data science problem has become a data engineering problem. What it means is, you know, right now we can offer some solutions based on these technologies to even small businesses, you know, to mom and pop businesses, which previously they could not access these expensive AI solutions, but we feel we are at a point where we can take these wonderful technologies that is coming out through ChatGPT, OpenAI, et cetera, and we can kind of create a solution for mass market. So that is, I think, is one of the biggest changes that I'm seeing in the industry, where AI was previously too expensive to develop and deploy, and also too complex to manage. And all of that is kind of changing with the advent of large language models, generative AI, et cetera.
Yeah. Interesting. So you mentioned that this openness, your software is now opened up to a smaller market, small businesses, mid-sized business perhaps. When you think about opportunities versus threats for employees from the employee perspective, I'm sure many employees are perhaps scared of AI and what it could do to their jobs. But when you look at it, I mean, in your situation, did you see it as more of a market expansion versus contraction of, you know, less work needs to be done?
Yeah, I mean, the close analogy that I can tell is, you know, I don't know, back when, you know, there were professions and jobs whose people's job were to type, you know, they used to be typewriters. Yeah. And then computers came in. At that point, people saw that as, hey, it's going to take away my job. But look at what it has done, right? It's expanded the industry. We have created new verticals within industry that focuses on automation, productivity, and enhancements through these things. I view what AI is doing in a similar way. At the moment, it can feel threatening because it looks very powerful, and it is. But I don't think I feel it is going to, you know, help us be more productive, whether you're a knowledge worker or somebody else in the industry. I think it's going to help you be more productive. That's the way I see it. It has definitely helped in my day-to-day life. I'm using a lot more of these tools now to, you know, and it has saved me time in writing emails, responding to emails, things like that.
Yeah.
I think it will, you know, but it's not going to, I think there is a place for human beings to intervene and control these things. Yeah. I think maybe that's where we are. And I think it's going to be more productive for people to use it. I don't see it as a threat just yet.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I know at universities, it's become such a challenge for teachers to figure out, you know, what could happen. But in the rest of the world, generative AI, I mean, just even the world of podcasting, I've seen in my own experience using this podcast in the last couple of years, the AI edits the podcast, creates video clips, cleans up the sounds, provides a transcript, writes a blog off of it. AI has basically become the content team in some ways.
Correct. I think just yesterday somebody sent me a link about Sam Altman saying that you can create unicorn with a single entrepreneur, like a single person can create a business that is $1 billion. And I see there is definitely, I don't think it's far from reality because like you said, you can now produce more videos, more shows because we are able to get more things done through, you know, through using ChatGPT or otherwise. I think that will be similar in many cases. I think we'll see more productivity gains because of that.
When OpenAI and ChatGPT sort of emerged in the last couple of years, it changed the way that you work. What was the first thing that sort of shifted in your company as soon as it, like, walk me through that timeline when all this sort of came about and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, how can we use this? Where did you all begin?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think for us as a, you know, as a company, you know, even though we are in the middle of conversations between our customers and their customers, traditionally AI requires a large amount of data to build machine learning models out of it, et cetera. Some companies like OpenAI, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon, they have the resources, R&D budget to go build these large language models with billions of parameters, et cetera. For companies that are like RingCentral and otherwise, our focus is more applied AI, meaning that we are not there to invent new large language models. And it became immediately clear that that's a direction that we don't want to go down that path necessarily, because what we want to do is we feel there is still a large amount of opportunity in terms of taking these technologies and creating compelling user solutions for problems and making some business case from there. We feel there is a lot of opportunity there than in the business of building our own large language models where we have to go train the data using customer information. We didn't want to do that. So it became we were never going to do that. But after the advent of, you know, large language models from all these companies, it became very clear that we don't want to be competing with them, but rather use them to augment our solution space. We were already going in that direction, but it just reinforced our decision that we don't want to be in the business of building and selling large language models, but rather we want to use them and create solutions on top of them. And that's a place where we think we can add a lot of value to customers.
Yes, I mean, and how can you compete in that space? OpenAI seems like they got all of this data from somewhere, you know, over a long period of time. It's almost as if, you know, they have all the information readily available.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is OpenAI, and then there is Microsoft Azure, which basically offers enterprise level guidance on, you know, some of these. There's a lot more scrutiny in terms of what data they're using and how customers' data are used to augment that model. I was more referring to the more enterprise-grade version. What you and I, consumers, use on OpenAI, that's very different, right? And obviously, there are a lot of sensitivity around how those models were trained, and the jury is still out there in terms of, you know, what they did was the right thing or not. I don't know, and I'm not in a position to comment on that. But even outside of OpenAI, there is, you know, we've worked with other players, hyperscalers from Google Bard, we've tested them, and Amazon has Bedrock. And then there's open source models, Llama 2, which are equally promising. But like I said, you know, these are all different avenues that are available for anybody to pursue. But the winner in this place is going to be someone who can think about consumer customer problems and starting with that and then creating an experience around that. At the end of the day, customers don't care like how we solve the problem as long as we solve them for them in an elegant way and in a cost-effective way. So that's what our customers care about, and we are more focused on that.
So as you were thinking through this transition a couple of years ago, how did you navigate it with your staff? I mean, how do you train your staff, get them thinking about this, get them out of their comfort zone and start thinking that, you know, perhaps you don't need to do these mundane tasks anymore. You need to get to this bigger stuff here.
No, I mean, that's a very interesting. This is evolving. I don't know if anybody has solved it for sure. What has happened is what it did for us, actually, it did open up the floodgates for us. You know, previously, I've worked in companies where there's a dedicated group of data scientists, ML engineers, whose job was to build these models or kind of create, you know, AI, conversational AI models for customers. With the advent of, you know, Microsoft Azure's OpenAI and other standards, any engineer, as long as who could subscribe to those APIs and build things more quickly, more independently. So it actually opened up the floodgates for more engineers who traditionally don't have a data science background to build a solution that leverages some of these without going into details of how the actual, you know, models work. They were able to build and demonstrate solutions. So it actually worked in our favor in terms of people being able to be, you know, bring a solution, demonstrate a solution to the leadership team much more quickly. So we found that to be actually an eye-opening, because we now unlock innovation from, all channels within the engineering team, not just the data scientists and ML engineers, but now everybody is able to build solutions for using AI. So that actually was a big change that I saw. And I think that a lot of companies are now beginning to kind of think through policies that they can enforce, because now, you know, because it's available to everyone, you need to have some controls, access controls in terms of how it's applied.
Yeah, I mean, I think it almost challenges the data scientists and the people that are programmers to really think through things much deeper, because you're going to be spot-checked against an AI.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a place for that. I mean, there is still a lot of places where you still need to calibrate the data. You need to, you know, it's not a silver bullet for all the solutions. And OpenAI kind of large language models, when you subscribe from players like Microsoft, Google, it is still fairly expensive for large scale deployments, right? So the cost is still pretty high. So, you know, our architecture needs to be like hybrid. When do we use large language models? Whereas when do we use our own, you know, SLMs, small language models? When do we use other systems in a way that, you know, we don't need LLMs for all use cases, but we need to have an architecture that expands and scales based on the problem that we're trying to solve. So there are still roles that a traditional machine learning person or a data scientist in the company plays. But now I think, you know, it is the problem space is broadened so that everybody can contribute to the solution.
So when you think about your employees now, do you have like a training process for new employees, current employees, that you have to kind of get them thinking in this mindset? Because perhaps many people that have been traditionally working in the space don't have the knowledge of AI in that same way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there is a, like, you know, we have encouraged people to go get some, you know, go to a class on Udemy or any of these publicly available sources. And it's more up to individuals. And this is where I think, you know, you can see, you know, 5 years from now, you know, which engineers will be more relevant than others is people who kind of embrace these technologies and figure out a way to kind of enhance their own skill set and productivity are the ones who are going to be extremely sought after in a couple of years, right? So, you know, right now we don't have a formal program as far as I know, but all my team members, I encourage them to use and learn. You know, all of them have subscriptions to their own ChatGPT per se, but, you know, we've left it to for people to kind of go out there and, you know, build their own, enhance their own skill set. But it's a question that I think we need to think through more, where we can say we have sort of programs that we want to, as a new employee coming on board, maybe we have a few things that we can have them go through in terms of policy, data usage, et cetera, data privacy guidelines. Those are the things that I think we want to be focused on right now.
Definitely. I think, you know, one of the big areas just in general with ChatGPT is understanding how to prompt. I think many people don't even know how to ask the right questions, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is something that, you know, in the beginning, everybody was struggling, right? I mean, you had, and, you know, I think every, even now, a lot of people are figuring out what's the right prompt, how to optimize the prompt, how to optimize the payload. Because when you're doing it at a personal level, right, I think you have a certain luxury in terms of, you don't care too much about what is the cost of each prompt and what is the, you know, latency between asking a question and finding an answer. And, you know, you can, if you didn't ask the right question, you can ask it a different way in a personal use case. But when it comes to enterprise use cases, you don't have that luxury. You have to optimize for making sure that we are sending the right payload. The payload size needs to be the right size. We need to make sure that these prompts are generic enough where we get optimized results and we don't have to wait too long to get a response back. So there's a lot of things that we still, you know, my engineering team have done a great job in terms of working and excelling on that. But it took us some time to kind of getting more proficient there. Like I said, you know, you see already, I think I see a future where there will be companies that will be coming on board that to help with this process of figuring out the right payload, what kind of prompts to engineer and what, how to reduce latency in responses when it comes from OpenAI. So already I can see a lot of new business opportunities for new players to come on board here and, you know, make it more democratized that access.
So when you think about, this is my last question to you, when you think about the future, you know, what advice do you give and what trends do you see in the future? What do you see happening in the future?
With respect to
AI just as a whole,
Yeah, I mean, see, I think in general, I feel that we are at a cusp of an inflection point in terms of productivity gains that both you're going to see at an enterprise level as well as an individual level in terms of what these technologies can do. I do feel that we need to embrace this with open arms and see how we could enhance your own skills, how to increase your own knowledge. I do think as a business opportunity, it is reducing the complexity of deployment of these AI models. And it's going to take AI more mainstream to more and more, like mom and pop shops and SMBs and small businesses will start benefiting from this. And companies and individuals who are in that path will, I feel that they have a lot more opportunities to, you know, add value and I think they will be riding the wave there. I definitely feel that this is going to mean, it's going to, previously what was possible only by large enterprises is now going to be possible by every company, every business, and people who are working in this is going to benefit largely. So the advice I give is, you know, ride that wave, right? Definitely there's a wave. There's an opportunity to ride that wave.
Don't be late. You want to be the last person doing this, right? You could be ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Definitely. I really appreciate your time, Ram. Appreciate you, your insights, and thank you for joining us here at the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast.
My pleasure, Bas, and thanks for reaching out to me. Thank you. Bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion, where we provide platforms, software, and test development and delivery services for certification programs.